Authority for personal injury, divorce, and probate cases. Peter Mortensen and Darius Raffi are responsible for the content of this ad.
The right station for Las Vegas. KMZQ, 670 AM, Las Vegas.
The station you can trust.
Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Keith Peters. Several GOP lawmakers claim the actual COVID-19 death toll in the U.S. is 10,000, not the 180,000 as reported by the CDC. Bob Agnew reports.
President Trump is not the only Republican to voice the belief that actual COVID-19 deaths are far fewer than the official tally. It's a view also being espoused by Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa and Representative Roger Marshall of Kansas, both in tough Senate races this fall. The theory rests on a CDC webpage. It states the coronavirus was listed as a cause of only 6% of coronavirus-related deaths. The higher number includes patients with underlying conditions such as obesity and diabetes. Bob Agnew reporting.
The relentless fire season has set a record in California for the amount of land destroyed. Over 2 million acres have been burned this year, even as firefighters continue to battle blazes today both in the southern and northern parts of the state. The Creek Fire in the Sierras is the largest blaze. It threatened the town of Shaver Lake before firefighters saved the area. About 30 homes were destroyed in the remote hamlet of Big Creek. The fire charred more than 114 square miles. In Southern California, there are three fires burning. One in San Bernardino County, where fireworks were set off at a gender reveal party for a newborn baby, one near Mount Wilson in the Angeles National Forest, and one in eastern San Diego County. As Americans mark Labor Day, a research fellow with the Heritage Foundation says the holiday is an excellent opportunity to honor the work Americans do for the betterment of society.
Recognizing the fruits of our labor, and work is fundamental, not just to the economy, but I think to human nature and just feeling the value that, you know, we produce out of work is something that is, foundational to all of us.
Rachel Gretzler spoke to the Salem Radio Network. More on these stories at townhall.com.
I'm United States Surgeon General Jerome Adams, America's doctor. And all across our nation, we've taken steps together to slow the spread of coronavirus. Now we must continue to take personal responsibility to protect ourselves and our loved ones. Because even though not all of us risk a severe case of coronavirus, we all risk getting it and spreading it to others, maybe without even realizing that we're sick. So if we want to get back to school, back to work, back to worship, and back to overall health, there are things our country needs to do. We need to follow state and local guidelines, take extra precautions if at higher risk, wash our hands frequently, stay 6 feet from others when we can. And when we can't stay 6 feet from others, please, I'm begging you, wear a face covering. These small actions will make a big difference. So I'm asking you to say it with me, America. Coronavirus stops with me. You can learn more at coronavirus.gov.
Produced by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services at taxpayer expense.
A Saudi court has issued final verdicts in the case of slain Washington Post columnist and Saudi critic Jamal Khashoggi, after his family announced pardons that spared five of convicted individuals from execution. Correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The court ordered a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison for five of the accused, while another received a 10-year sentence and two others ordered to serve 7 years. Among those ensnared in Khashoggi's killing are a forensic doctor and intelligence and security officials. The Saudi Crown Prince has denied any knowledge of the operation. The trial has been widely criticised by rights groups and an independent UN investigator who noted that no senior officials nor anyone suspected of ordering the killing was found guilty. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
But the case continues to cast a shadow over the international standing of Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. News and analysis at townhall.com. Some drivers are taking advantage of roads and highways emptied by the coronavirus pandemic.
Speeding is a trend that continues even as states try to get back to normal. The Iowa State Patrol recorded a 101% increase from January through August over the four-year average in tickets for speeds exceeding 100 miles an hour, along with a 75% increase in tickets for speeds of 25 miles an hour or more over the posted speed limit. California Highway Patrol issued more than 15,000 tickets from mid-March through August 19th, for speeds exceeding 100 miles an hour. That's more than a 100% increase over the same time period a year ago. Ron DeRockstra reporting.
Florida reported 1,838 new cases of COVID-19 on Monday. That's the lowest single-day number of new infections reported by state health officials since June 15th. But officials are watching the results of the Labor Day weekend to see if there might be any spikes in the number of cases. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Washington, D.C. I got a lot of evil there, but we're getting it out step by step. A lot of evil. A lot of bad people. A lot of bad people. A lot of fake media. Look at them. A lot of fake media. NBC is perhaps worse than CNN, I have to tell you. And MSNBC is horrible.
Check it out!
It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press, a show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
That sounds awfully harsh. Why can't you be a little more supportive?
Number one! Time is running out! Number two!
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
So good to have you with us. All across Southern Nevada, it is live and local now. This hour brought to you by Liberty HealthShare, offering an affordable health care option that allows you to enroll any time of the year. You could even do it right now. Call 855-58-LIBERTY. That's 855-58-LIBERTY. Or check it out on your smartphone at libertyhealthshare.org/Kevin Wall. So happy to have State Senator Scott Hammond with us from Nevada 18. And he joins us. And first thing I've got to ask, the governor has a news conference scheduled for 5 o'clock this afternoon. He says he's going to talk about the Nevada residential eviction moratorium that I guess is going to get extended 45 days. Anything more that you think he's going to cover, any COVID-19 stuff, coronavirus stuff that we need to know about?
Well, first of all, Kevin, good to be on the program again. It's been a week, and a lot of things have happened. We're going to be listening here to the governor pretty soon. The eviction probably on the first on the docket. I really don't know. I think that maybe he's going to share with us some of the news coming out. I wish he'd share more of what comes out of the CDC and the report that comes out of the CDC, because there's just a lot of information in there that I just don't think a lot of people get or don't bother to look at that report. But you talk to the doctors, there's a lot of really good stuff coming out of the CDC. Numbers that would astound you, the number of cases related to COVID, the direct deaths related to COVID, and so forth. So I don't know if he'll actually talk about that, but I certainly will expect him to be talking about what he's trying to do to keep people in their homes.
Does it bother you that he keeps making these decisions, whether it's COVID-19 related or the residential eviction moratorium, that he keeps doing this stuff unilaterally without any impact? You correct me if I'm wrong on this, but any impact with the legislature?
Oh, absolutely. It bothers me. Matter of fact, the last day of the second special session, Republicans put out there a proclamation. We asked for Democrats to sign on that would have addressed the directives and the emergency powers that the governor has, any governor. So if you're a Democrat and you're worried about the future and how much power a governor has, that would have been a perfect opportunity to sit down and say, okay, let's have a third special session one day only, look at this. We had some ideas, very much like the president and his War Powers Act, where he has a certain number of days. He could say that I'm going to send troops in harm's way, and then we can have a review of the legislature afterwards. I think that with the directives, he has a certain amount of days, and then after that, we have to look at it and say, is it an emergency? I mean, is this something that needs to go on? But allow the legislature to look at whatever directive you have out there. I think that 30 days to make it a direct, put a directive out there and then live by that directive for 30 days. If it's an emergency, that's plenty of time. And then allow the checks and balances to happen. We're going to put that bill forward in the next legislative session, and we'll see who kills it off, or if it goes all the way through.
As far as the COVID-19 stuff, I keep hearing that we're having a reduction in numbers and that things are getting better here in the state of Nevada. Have you been tracking that much, and/or are we doing a better job?
Yeah, the numbers are coming down. And I talked to a doctor today, and he's telling me that the same thing, that the numbers are coming down. The hospital, I usually check in with them. I haven't had a hospital association. I haven't had a call back from them. The real numbers that I look at are, you know, the number of beds, how many ventilators are being used, you know, what's the capacity. I mean, because that's what we want to make sure that we keep an eye on. Because I know a lot of people who do get the virus, but literally they have a fever for a day and then they move on. And I'm not downplaying it. I totally understand people who have gone through this, and it's different for everybody. It can be devastating, you know, to death. And we understand that. But for many people, that less than 1%, that's what we're talking about. But for the 99%, it really is a cold that causes some discomfort for a few days, and then, you know, they move on.
Against Scott Hammond, state senator, Nevada District 18, joining us. And, you know, we're all trying to rebound from the COVID-19 virus. And, you know, even if we're doing a better job, do you expect the governor to ease up on us, to open us up a little bit more?
Oh, I expect it. I mean, I think what we're seeing now is sort of a backlash on some of the states and some of the policies that are coming. Where, you know, they're basically hampering everything, you know, the economy, the schools, everything. I just don't think that this is a winning. If this is a policy strategy, it's not a winning policy strategy. You know, whereas maybe a month or 2 months ago, you might have seen, you know, half the population, 50% saying let's keep everything, you know, online for schools, and the other half saying go back to school. I think it's shifted big time. Look, I was at a rally last week. And I would have to say that a large majority of people, not only here in Las Vegas, but throughout the state, are saying, we've got to get the kids back into school. And I'm not saying that get them back to school, you know, however, it's, you know, definitely safe, definitely with a good policy in mind, thinking about the health and safety of everybody, but put a plan together. Get something in the works. We're starting to put some of these kids back to school.
You mentioned a rally, the Power to Parent rally last Thursday at 5:30. You were very much a part of it. You spoke at the rally. Can you talk a little bit about the crowd and what you experienced?
Well, I certainly can. You know, there's a large crowd. There was over 200 people there. And again, we had to stand on the sidewalk. So that, you know, there wasn't a lot of room. So they were spread out all over the place. But great speakers. You know, we had people there who were really talking about kids with special needs. Special education, they're just not getting the services that they need. And this is a direct result of not having an education plan in place that is ready to help those kids with the individual education plan, the IEPs that people talk about a lot. They're just not getting it. And there was an expert there who said this is not happening. We had people there talking about the mental health, not only of kids, but, you know, they also have suggestions for some of the parents who are going through some struggles as we're quarantined these many months. And on top of that, you know, I had a meeting this past Friday, Child Welfare and Juvenile Justice, where we sat down at an interim committee meeting the legislature had, and we talked to experts here in the Valley, and you know what? There's two things that were not on my thought process, but now are. One, the number of kids who we were trying to keep them away from the school-to-prison pipeline, well, that being exacerbated by the fact that we didn't even know where some of these kids were very, you know, very much struggling before the pandemic. They haven't even bothered to show up for school. They, you know, they're just not keeping track of them. So that in itself is going to be a problem going forward. And then the next one is, you know, the school district used to be the ones who would submit lots of reports to child welfare about the condition, the safety of children in certain homes. You know, there's a lot of reports coming in. They haven't had any reports coming in for months and months. I know that normally over the summer months, those reports go down because, you know, the kids aren't in school. But they're just not coming in like they used to. And so there's going to be an uptick in the number of child abuse cases, but we can't identify them. We don't know where they are, and nobody's looking out for them.
Do we know through week one what the attendance figures were like during week one? Do we know what the absentee rate was?
Well, we do know that there were a lot of students who didn't even check in. I think I'm looking at my stats right now. There were over 300,000 students that should have been logged onto Canvas for learning, and yet only a little over half are reported as having been logged in for the entire school day, and that was in the first day or two of the of last week when the schools opened up. And then I think it was about, we're still 20,000 devices short, and there were there's 20,000 devices short of having enough for everybody to be able to get online. 68,000 students that didn't even connect, so they didn't even know where they were. They basically not attending. You know, they had them as listed as not attending. So that right there tells you that they don't quite have a handle on doing distance ed like this. And I'm not saying distance education is bad. For some people who deliver education this way, they've been doing it a long time. They've got it down pat. It's a little different right now, and I don't think that the quality is what we need. So I just don't want this to be a throwaway year, Kevin. I want to see students progress, and that's one of the things I'm worried about. And the best way to do that is trying to figure out how to get more of them right now in classes where they're face-to-face with teachers. Even if we're starting with some of the kids with needs, let's do it.
Who should be blamed for this? I mean, when you say the 20,000 kids either don't have Wi-Fi or don't have the Chromebooks or are just not reporting in, we've known that this was going to happen. We knew that school was going to begin August 10th or August 24th, but we knew. Why are we still 20,000 Chromebooks down?
They did order them. They're on back order. I mean, that's the reality of CCSD tried to get them. It's just that when a lot of other places across the country are ordering them at the same time, there's going to be a backlog. So that's one thing. But, you know, the reality is for hotspots and connecting to Wi-Fi, we saw, I think, in Kentucky that the government there said they're going to use $800 million of CARES Act money to try and beef up the Wi-Fi system there in Kentucky. Nobody was talking about that here. No, you know, and that should be. I think there was a letter that went out from the Department of Education suggesting that we really figure this out, beefing this up. So they knew it's a problem, but it's about putting the right kind of money. And there's still plenty of CARES Act money. Matter of fact, one of the things that Republican senators said during the special session, the first one, the 31st one, when we're talking about the budget, we actually suggested that we put money, CARES Act money, into education for a variety of reasons. One was to actually, and this is one of the things I talked about on Thursday at the Power to Parents rally, this ought to be a choice. If there are teachers out there who want to get back in the classroom, and they exist. There are students, and there are teachers who want to get back in the classroom. If they want to get in there, give them hazard pay. You know, give them an incentive to get back in and get these students taught. But the same thing, we could be putting money towards Wi-Fi. We could be doing a lot of things get the classrooms cleaned and prepared and health-wise, because I know a lot of people are talking about that as well. But you know what? The biggest thing that we did that's going to hurt the ability of the schools to open was not including schools in that liability protection. And that was from the teachers' union. They're the ones who pushed for that. They wanted the language, they wanted the schools taken out of the language so that they would have leverage to negotiate and bargain and try and figure out whatever they wanted. That's exactly what happened. And so once you took them out of that language, there's just no way the public schools could open. And even charter schools are going to have a hard time opening when they are now open to all kinds of liability. They're not protected for any kind of liability that might come their way.
Yeah, and that's something the legislature in its infinite wisdom did, which makes absolutely no sense. Scott Hammond joining us, Nevada District 18 State Senator. We'll talk about what was an amazing four nights of entertainment and the difference between the horrible Democrat convention coverage and what we saw last week. We'll get to that and a whole lot more coming up. My name is Kevin Wall, Scott Hammond alongside as we continue. It's a Monday edition on AM 670 KMZQ.
What did I tell you? I told you we'd all get through the darkest hours of the COVID-19 pandemic together. And we did. Hey, Kevin Wall here. Throughout the governor's stay-at-home orders, Francois and all my friends at Ichabod's Lounge on East Flamingo at Pecos stayed open 24-7 to serve up the same amazing food that Vegas residents have come to expect over the past 30-plus years. But now, the Clark County Commission says it's okay to get out of the house, to reconnect with old friends, to have fun. And the best place to do that is at Ichabod's Lounge. They've completed extensive remodeling that will allow you to play while adhering to social distancing and mandated cleanliness. So, at Ichabod's Lounge, you can have fun and still stay safe. Ichabod's Lounge is back, featuring old-school Vegas atmosphere and one of the top gaming bars in Las Vegas, with the Valley's top gaming promotions. Ichabod's Lounge, open 24-7 with live music. Ichabod's, vintage Vegas dining, gaming lounge and piano bar on East Flamingo at Pecos.
Let's face it, these are challenging times. Hey, Kevin Wall here for SRT Special Services. Since 2014, SRT Special Services has provided Southern Nevada businesses with executive protection, safe rooms, residential security, and more. Now, in the COVID-19 era, it's important to know who's coming into your place of business. Ask the pros at SRT Special Services about the Liberty AI with facial recognition and thermal scanning. The Liberty AI can let you know if the next customer through your front door is running a temperature, protecting your employees, your customers, and your corporate liability. Facial recognition and temperature scanning technology has been out there for years. Now, the security pros at SRT Special Services can offer the Liberty AI at a price that even small mom-and-pop businesses can afford. If your business deals with the general public, you need the Liberty AI from SRT Special Services. Call 702-221-1942. That's 702-221-1942. Call today. Many of us live every day with chronic pain. Hey, Kevin Wall here. If you suffer from chronic pain, you need to do something about it. I'm here to tell you about PIBCOA, the Pain, Injury, and Brain Centers of America, now open in Las Vegas. At PIBCOA, they treat chronic pain without addictive drugs and with non-invasive pain-free therapy that increases healing by 500%. It's this rapid healing that makes the pain go away. Now, this technology has been used by professional athletes for more than 30 years, and now it's available to you. For over 8 months, I dealt with my own chronic pain from a rotator cuff injury. I tried cortisone shots, painful physical therapy, and nothing worked. My doctor had me scheduled for arthroscopic surgery, but thankfully, I discovered PIBCOA. After just 6 pain-free treatments at PIBCOA, my shoulder pain went away. Repeat, my shoulder pain went away, and we canceled the surgery. Make your pain go away. Call PIBCOA at 702-546-8767. That's 702-546-8767.
Planning for tax season? Hi, this is Ray DiNardi. When used for business, a Range Rover can be depreciated at a faster rate than most luxury cars. So now, owning a Range Rover not only affords extreme breadth of capability to your business, it can deliver significant tax advantages as well. Consult your tax advisor for details. Let our business take care of yours. Come in for a test drive today at our new location, 6425 Roy Horn Way, on the south side of the 215, just west of Jones.
Thank you for staying home for Nevada. As we continue to work together to prevent the spread of COVID-19, we must all do our part. Avoid non-essential travel and gatherings. Work from home. And remember, if you must go out, stay 6 feet from others and wash your hands often. If you're sick, you must stay home. We all know someone we want to protect, mom, grandpa, or a family friend. There are many reasons to stay home for Nevada, and stopping the spread of this virus is up to all of us. And I encourage Nevadans to stay up to date with reliable information by calling 211 or visiting the Nevada Health Response website at nvhealthresponse.nv.gov. Thank you to everyone for supporting your neighbors, working together, and staying home for Nevada.
This message funded by a grant through the Nevada Department of Health and Human Services, aired in cooperation with the Nevada Broadcasters Association and this station.
Big name guests, the news of the day, mixed in with a diversity of opinions. Live and local with Kevin Wall, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on AM 670 KMZQ. Talk radio done right.
You got to love it. I keep thinking back to last week and just the amazing performance of the Republican National Committee they did such an amazing job at putting on that. Do you think that the convention changed any minds? I mean, we always talk about independents and undecideds and all of that. By the way, Scott Hammond joining a state senator, Nevada District 18. You think it changed any minds?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, going into this convention, I think that the numbers were not as favorable for the president and the Republican Party, and I think coming out of it, we have gained a tremendous amount. Matter of fact, I keep seeing one poll after another that indicate that what you saw at the Republican convention was really this is what the president is running for. This is what we're standing for right now, and pretty much it. Contrast with the Democrats, where of course the Democrats are hiding in different places. You know, they're packed. They basically are saying there's got to be social change right now, and that the COVID is killing people, and we can't be doing anything. And you know, that's kind of their platform right now. And there's a stark difference between them and right now the Republican Party coming out of this convention. We're seeing numbers bumping up, trending upwards for Republicans almost everywhere.
You know what, one of the best stories to come out of there was John Ponder. He's going to join us at 5:05. Obviously, being a state senator, I'm guessing that at some point you have your paths have crossed. What do you think of John Ponder and the amazing story, Hope for Prisoners?
I think he's wonderful. I mean, I know that every state up there, yes, my paths have crossed with John several times. I've been associated with Hope for Prisoners for many years now. I've spoken there several times at his graduations. He's an inspiration, and I know that every municipality out there, I know that they've had police forces from Milwaukee, from Dallas, from other states and cities coming out here to kind of look at what they do, Hope for Prisoners and Metro, and that relationship that they have. And I know that they would love to be able to scale that, and they can, but you also have to have, you have to be able to scale the kind of personality that you get with a John Ponder. That they might find even more, find it very difficult to do. But you have to have somebody like John Ponder running that thing, and that's not easy to duplicate. And what a wonderful moment for him, his family, his young daughters, just tremendous to be in to get a pardon from the president all these years later. And he just has done so much for our community. I'm so grateful that this happened for him.
Is that the kind of program that does get state dollars? I know the state gives a lot of money out to various organizations, including probably, I'm just guessing, Planned Parenthood. Is this the kind of program that can or should be given state dollars?
It does not, as a matter of fact. And should it? Yeah. As a matter of fact, the last two sessions, I've actually proposed legislation that put out parameters that if you're an organization and you do X, Y, and Z, then you should qualify for state dollars, so that what we're doing is we're allowing them to have a certain amount of money from the state, but they're still out there making money, getting donations. It's the win-win, right? Because this organization, Kevin, does so much to hold the recidivism down for folks coming out of the system. They give a hope to them, which is exactly what their name is, Hope for Prisoners, and they do such a fantastic job that the state actually saves money. And so if any kind of program like what you see with Hope for Prisoners and others like them, as a matter of fact, there's one up north, another one down here that's trying to get going. When you see the passion behind the folks who run these organizations, and, John Ponder is the guy who's lived it. He knew what it was like to have no hope, and then he knew exactly that moment it happened when he was incarcerated, what needed to happen in his life and how he needed to change it, and he does it for everybody else now. Then those are the kind of people who are going to be able to run an organization effectively. There's passion behind that, and I don't mind. Matter of fact, that's why I introduced the bill twice now. I just couldn't get Democrats to get on board with it. And so, I'm going to take another shot at that because I think it's a worthwhile program. And again, they save us money. They save us a ton of money because they do it and they do it right.
As you look ahead, are there other programs like this or other initiatives that you've been able to lay out saying, when we do get back and when we do come to our next session, I'm going to really push for this. Is there anything out there that's on your early wish list?
Well, there's a couple programs I've kind of sponsored a couple sessions. In schools, I really love the kind of leadership program, and there's several different kinds. I know at a couple of the charters I've been at, they've really concentrated on Leader in Me. Leader in Me can be found in public schools, charter schools, and many others. It's a leader, sort of a lighthouse school. I mean, I always felt like if we had a grant program, that if the schools raise this amount of money, the state should be putting this amount of money in to you know.